ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the very first Anything and Everything podcast. My name is Mr. Leon, and I'd like to give you a warm welcome to this new venture that I have decided to start. Like the name implies, the Anything and Everything podcast will be about anything and everything, quite honestly. And I am very privileged to do this because I believe that what I'm doing right now is something that needs to get done. Somebody needs to do this. I know there are millions of podcasts out there, and that's great. I'm not out here to compete with anybody. I'm actually out here just to entertain. And by entertain yourself and, quite honestly, myself. Because the things that I'm going to talk about are topics that I believe that are important for everybody. And as the name implies, I believe that anything and everything goes with anything and everything. I'm going to be talking about sports, politics, culture, and everything and anything that we can imagine. I'll be setting up an email account so you guys can send me your requests on things that you want me to touch on, and I'll be more than happy to do that for you. Starting today, it's Wednesday, November 18th. And just as I'm recording this, going into sports here quickly, I just got word over, ESPN and Fox Sports 1 that Dallas Keuchel of the Houston Astros has been named the AL Cy Young for this season. And Dallas beat David Price with 22 out of 30 first place votes. And it's interesting because Dallas won 20 games this year. He pitched 232 innings and had an ERA of 2.48 with 216 strikeouts over the regular season, and he is the first Astros player to receive the AL Cy Young or NL Cy Young award since Roger Clemens did it in 2004. And Dallas, of course, he joins shortstop Carlos Correa of the Houston Astros as another award-winning player for that team. And it's unbelievable what that team did this year, especially with the young players that they have, the great talent that they had. And it will be interesting to see going forward next season whether or not this team can keep up the work that they've done. I believe that they can. I think that this group, if kept intact, and maybe a couple of additions here and there, especially around in the bullpen, I think that they can make another run in the playoffs, and who knows, maybe go deep in the playoffs. I don't want to put them yet on an elite level because, it was just one season, and the track record and the sample is really just small. One season, can be a good thing. But then you look at a team like the Royals, the Kansas City Royals, of course, the World Series champions right now. And they did it, and everybody thought it was a fluke. And, they came back and have done it consistently. They did it consistently that last year. And obviously, winning the World Series was a huge thing for them. So I'm interested to see where this Houston Astros team goes from here. Having such good core young players that, are willing to go out there every day and play the game the way it's supposed to be played. I'm actually really proud to be a countryman of Carlos Correa, Puerto Rican. I was born in Puerto Rico. So this, to me, is really a great thing to see, Puerto Rican-born players back in the spotlight in major leagues after such a long time where we really didn't see that happening because our, crop of players, not to say that they were bad, but, we weren't putting out the greatest talent. And going outside of that comfort zone and going into, players from the Dominican Republic, from Venezuela, from Mexico even. So you had, and obviously Cuba with the Cuban defectors that have come on major league rosters over the past 5-6 years, Puerto Rican baseball has taken a hit. However, I think that Carlos Correa does, in fact, give us a great start again. From our glory days when we had Ivan Rodriguez, we had Carlos Baerga, we had Roberto Alomar, Sandy Alomar. We had, you know, a great group of players that were playing. Bernie Williams, you know, comes to mind as well. The great years he had with the New York Yankees in the late 90s. So it's something really great. And, you know, Carlos Correa, of course, he's got a good brother that's coming up through the ranks. And, you know, a lot of people like him too. So it's going to be interesting to see where Puerto Rican baseball goes from here on out. And where the Houston Astros, going back to that topic, go from here on out. I'm very interested to see where they go forward starting next year. And then on another breaking news that just happened right after Dallas Coach's Cy Young Award is the Cubs, Jake Arrieta, another Puerto Rican, or actually a descendant of Puerto Rican. He just won the NL Cy Young Award. He did it with a great year, 22 wins, 1.77 ERA, the second best in the majors. He had a 0.75 ERA after the All-Star break. I mean, this is great stuff. This is something of legend. When you look at what, you know, Jake did throughout the basically middle half, latter part of the year, he was outstanding, and he's the first Cub since Greg Maddux to win this award. And it's very interesting to see this Cubs team, who basically had swept up to this point the National League awards, with Joe Madden being selected as the manager of the year for the National League, and Chris Bryant, of course, also being selected in his category as rookie of the year. And it's interesting to see this team as well, like the Astros, you know, come on and have a big impact on baseball. And baseball, if you don't follow baseball, I mean, I gotta be honest with you, I stopped following baseball regularly a while ago. I was a huge Atlanta Braves fan, especially during those 1990 seasons, early 2000s. And I want to say that my last year where I actually had interest in baseball and was actually in it to watch it was the last year that Chipper Jones was on the team of the Atlanta Braves team before he retired. And the main reason why it was that way was because, you know, after that, even though we've had great players come on, you know, you think about Mike Trout out in the LA Angels, you know, you think about the guys in LA and the Dodgers as well. You think about now, you know, with the Mets, you have Matt Harvey, you know, and those guys that are coming up now that are making a name for themselves. For some reason, baseball to me has not been that interesting. And I'm not very happy to say that. I'm not, you know, I'm being honest. I don't like the fact that it hasn't been that good for me, because I've basically let go of my passion for baseball. And seeing these teams, you know, growing up watching the Cubs on WGN in Puerto Rico was a great thing. Same thing with the Braves, you know, being able to watch them every day on TBS. You know, I remember coming home from school and getting on the TV as quick as I got there just to see whether the Braves were playing, or, you know, normally it would be a day game for the Cubs, so you could catch that very, very quick. However, it's been a while since I've been interested in baseball, and I gotta be honest, right now, I kind of am again. Looking at these two teams, you know, the Cubs and the Houston Astros, where are they going? You know, Kansas City, can they come back again and repeat this? I mean, go back to the World Series for a third straight year. And I think it would be a great feat if they would actually do that. But quite honestly, I mean, I think baseball is a little bit on the rebound. From my perspective, I believe baseball has been kind of hurt by certain things. You know, of course, a lot of people with the whole PED scandals, you know, throughout, throughout the years, you know, it's actually been kind of hard for baseball to keep up. And, you know, that's not nothing against baseball. It's just, You know, it's just the way it is. Moving on from baseball, you know, I think the biggest story right now in basketball, and it just so happened today, was the firing of Houston Rockets coach Kevin McHale. You know, and I'm not a Houston Rockets fan. I'm a Chicago Bulls fan, but I'm gonna touch on this subject because I believe that this is you know, this is an anomaly, and I think that if Dwight Howard was healthier and he was playing well, I think this team wouldn't have the record that they have right now. I think that if they were healthier and they were making probably, you know, better decisions, I think this team would be at a much better place than where they are right now. You know, as we speak, they're 4-7. You know, that they've lost 4 games in a row. You know, I'm not saying, you know, it's time to hit the panic button, which they did. I don't believe that it was time to hit the panic button, but they did. And for some reason, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting to see them hit that panic button and, you know, fire McHale after a players-only meeting. And definitely you can tell that the team was not listening to him. They tuned him out. You know, I'm not an insider by any means, but you can tell on the sidelines, you know, you can tell the body language of the players, and you can tell what they, you know, what they feel like. And, you know, having been a player in teams and, you know, in the work environment that I do, when you have people tune you out as a leader, that just spells, you know, it spells disaster. And I think that's what happened here with Kevin McHale. Where James Harden, who's probably the leader of this team, and I say probably because, you know, he's a star, and he got them so close to the NBA finals last year, but I think James Harden should probably be, you know, taking this opportunity right now and just making the best of it. I mean, if what they wanted was a coaching change, they got it, and, you know, it's going to be up to the new interim coach. You know, they've already said that they're going to keep him for the rest of the year, not going to bring anybody in, and then they're going to reassess the situation. The only reason I see them changing that stance is if, you know, if they keep losing, which if that happens, I mean, then you got to start looking not necessarily on your bench at your coach, but at the players. I mean, it has something gone wrong. So, you know, that being said, you know, you go to the second biggest story right now in the NBA, which I think it's not being talked about enough in the media, mainstream media, and it's the Golden State Warriors being perfect right now. You look at the Warriors, I mean, they pretty much brought everybody from last year except, you know, the trade they made for, you know, taking David Lee away, sending him away for Jason Thompson. And you look at this team, I mean, they're 12-0. You can't hide the fact that they're 12-0. And they have looked, quite honestly, as the best team in the NBA. And the record doesn't really speak to how well this team has looked. And I honestly... I'm a fan of Stephen Curry. I think he's an outstanding player. I think that, you know, he's probably the best player in the NBA right now, you know, with all due respect to LeBron James. I mean, he's averaging 33 points a game. You know, you can make the argument for almost 34. It's amazing. I mean, it is amazing, and when you look at, you know, the way that they play, just I don't know, they just seem to be so in tune, and it's so different. I mean, look at their stats. You know, they're obviously number one in points per game. They're 10th in opposing points per game, which is really outstanding. And they were really good last year too. So, and this team, you know, playing the way that they play, it's great. I mean, they average 115 points on the road. On the road, they average 113 at home. You know, they turn up their defense when they're on the road. They average 10 steals a game when they're on the road, and when they only average 9 when they're at home. And then the other thing that's outstanding, at least in my eyes, it's the way that their three-point percentage does not drop off, whether that's at home or on the road. It's basically 40% at both ends. And they shoot about 47% at home and 49% on the road. I mean, it's just outstanding the way that they play. And, you know, quite honestly, they're getting, you know, they're getting a great deal of you know, game from Stephen Curry, obviously, Klay Thompson. But look at the stats. Look at this stat that I'm going to give you. On a one-day rest, which they've played 6 games on just one game, one day of rest, they average 111 points. They have a plus-minus differential of 17.8. That is the best plus-minus differential on any day's rest that the Warriors have. That's unbelievable. I mean, when you can come in on a one-day rest, and I'm not even going to touch the no-day rest, so the back-to-backs, which they've had 3 already. And in those games, for your information, they average 122 points per game. And they have a plus-minus of 12. How astonishing is that? And on 0 days rest, so on back-to-backs, they average 40% from three-point range. 40%. That's insane. In basketball terms, that is insane. That is definitely the best team in basketball right now, hands down, hands down. I just think they are. I think they're the best team in basketball, hands down. I mean, just, again, you know, going back to the stats, it's, you know, I like to look at the advanced metrics right now and the way that they're being, excuse me, done. And going back to the whole 0 days of rest, 1 day of rest, 2 and 4 days of rest, when you look at their defensive rating on 1 day's rest, it's astounding. It's a 90.1. defensive rating. I mean, it's if you don't know what this is, if you go to NBA.com and you go to team stats and then advanced stats, basically the defensive rating for a team is the number of points allowed per 90 per 100 possessions by a team. So basically, on 1 day's rest, it's 90.1. Now, if you go to the 0 days rest, which is the back-to-backs, which they've had 3 so far, it's 105.1. However, you know, you go back to the previous stats I gave you on 0 days rest, it's like they're even better offensively with in the back-to-backs. This is, it's astounding. Their true shooting percentage in back-to-back games is 61.6. And if you don't know what that is a shooting percentage that is adjusted to include the value of three-pointers and free throws. So, I mean, that is a big number. This team, you know, if you look at regular stats, you know, they're first in points per game, like I said. They're 13 in rebounds. They're number one in assists. Now, and like I said earlier, 10th in points per game. You know, number one in assists. I mean, wow, it's outstanding. You know, to see the way that this team plays, and you know, and forget about the stats for a second. Go into a game, watch a game on TV. If you're fortunate enough, you know, go see them live. The chemistry of this team, it's amazing. It is outstanding. I have never seen such a great chemistry. And, you know, you can argue that the LeBron James down in Miami when they won the 2 championships and then, you know, went to the finals so many years in a row, they were a good team. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not a LeBron James fan myself, seeing as though I'm a Chicago Bulls fan. But he has a set of specific skills that make him a great player. You know, a lot of people would argue that he's one of the greatest players of all time, and you know, I have a great amount of respect for him and for the way he plays. However, I still don't think he's in that plateau of greatest players of all time. You know, I don't want to say that you judge a great player by the championships he's won, but you know, you got to look at your resume as a whole, and that includes championship. And you know, to me, Michael Jordan is probably the greatest player of all time, not only because of the championships, but because of the elite resume that he put together when he was in the league. Now, I could argue with you and say that Bill Russell is probably the best player in the history of the NBA. However, a lot of people will look at Bill Russell and his 11 titles and, you know, say that the era where he played was completely different. And that's true. That is a fact. The era where Bill and Wilt played, it was definitely different. However, you look at Michael Jordan and all the people that he had to go through, you know, in the late, you know, mid-80s, late-80s, you know, with the Pistons and the Celtics, you know, 76ers when Barkley came into the league. I mean, you talk about a gauntlet for a player. And I'm not, you know, counting out the Lakers as well, you know, in the West. But you look at the Chicago Bulls team of the 80s and 90s, they had to go through a lot. They had to go through a lot of teams that were at certain points in time better than them. And I think that provided a certain stigma of we had to get over the hump. Golden State right now, to me, got over the hump. They got their experience through, you know, the one and dones in the previous seasons, and then eventually going a little bit deeper and deeper. And you know, a lot of people would make a case that last year was a fluke, was pure luck because of, you know, how, you know, they got people that were injured in the case of Cleveland. You know, San Antonio, they didn't get out of the first round. You know, they didn't get to take on the Clippers, who were probably on their way up. You know, all of that is nonsense, because when you go through the Western Conference, that's hard enough. And then when you have to go to an NBA Finals and face off against LeBron James, arguably at the time, on top of his game, maybe the best player in the game at that time, he's lifting his teammates up with his style of play, even though you had Kyrie Irving out and obviously Kevin Love. So if you're Golden State, you come into the NBA Finals and you're battling not only LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers, but you're also battling Stephen Curry, who's there for the first time. And for the first few games in that NBA Finals, he was struggling. Even though he got, you know, good amount of points in all those games, he had to take an extra huge amount of shots. You had Klay Thompson, who was struggling as well. They couldn't really find a good rhythm in the first two games of the Finals. And, you know, that ultimately led to other things unraveling. You know, Draymond Green coming on strong. Obviously, Andre Iguodala coming on strong after game three forward. And then eventually, you know, they winning the title in six games in Cleveland. But it is, I think, the biggest cohesive unit that the NBA has had in a while. And again, I'm not discounting the Cavaliers from last year. I'm not discounting the Miami Heat from several years ago. And of course, the San Antonio Spurs, who have had their core players for the longest time. They have won five championships, I take that back, dating back to the days when Tim Duncan came into the league. So you have to look at this Golden State Warriors team at 12-0 right now and think, you know, this team is definitely the best team out there in the league. And no doubt about it, they are outstanding at what they do. They take good care of the basketball. They take good care of You know, the way that they play, they're good. And, you know, when you look at, you know, they're 12-0 right now. A lot of people are saying, you know, they might go 16-0, you know, to beat the record. So let's take a look at the teams that they're going to be playing here for the next four games. You know, you got November 19th, so tomorrow night, they're going to be playing against the Los Angeles Clippers. Clippers, you know, they're a good team. I mean, they are 6-4 right now. You know, they're still kind of piecing their game together. You know, they got a good record, obviously. They're over 500, and they've had some good games. However, there are several games where you look at them and you kind of feel, you know, lost at where they are. Then you go on a back-to-back on next night, November 20th, which is Friday night. They play against the Chicago Bulls. Chicago, 7-3. They're playing later on tonight against the Phoenix Suns in Phoenix. So if you're Golden State, you know, this is a game where Derrick Rose might not play because he sprained an ankle the other night in their last game, Chicago's last game. So you're looking at it from a perspective of, you know, you got their minus Derrick Rose, who's been, you know, kind of on and off this year. This is definitely a good game. However, you know, Chicago last year went to Golden State and was one of the two teams that actually won in Golden State last year. So Chicago, if there's a team on the next few that the Warriors are going to play these next four games, I think Chicago's got the better chance to beat them, even though they're at home, just because they did it the last time they were there last year. And then they travel on November 22nd to Denver. Denver, you know, another team that's kind of like trying to find their image. They're 6-5 right now, as of this taping. So, you know, it's kind of up in the air where they're at. And then, of course, you know, November 24th is going to be their 16th game against the Los Angeles Lakers. So the Lakers right now, as of this taping, they're 2-9. You know, and it's rough. The Lakers are very rough right now. You know, Kobe Bryant is having issues, and you know, you don't want this to, you know, this if this is Kobe Bryant's last season, and you know, we can talk about Kobe either later on or at a later date. So going back to the Warriors, I mean, I think these four games, the one game where I think it could be hard for them to keep it up would be against the Bulls in their second game of the next, you know, their second game of the next four. I'm not discounting, you know, counting out the Clippers. I think the Clippers are a great team. But like I said, I think they're still trying to find themselves. And I think that, you know, because of that, it might be a little bit tough, even though it's at Staples Center. But Golden State always plays very hard at the Staples Center. So I think it's going to be a great matchup the way it is right now. So we got to definitely watch the next four games for them and see where they go. I think that the one game that they really got to watch is that Chicago Bulls game at home, because the Bulls are a pretty tough team, even though, you know, defensively they're not that great as years past when Tom Thibodeau was at the helm. But they bring it, if you will, every night when they play. And the new offense, even though, you know, a lot of people say it's not fitting with the many big men that the Bulls have, you know, it's they're scoring a lot of points. So I think, in my mind, that eventually, you know, the Bulls will basically be able to get it together. And, you know, speaking of the Bulls, this is a great transition to them. You know, you heard me say that the Bulls are my favorite team in the NBA. I grew up watching Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls in the late 80s and obviously the 90s teams. And, you know, I've been through, you know, through and through with them ever since I became a huge fan back when Michael was playing. And even when he left, I stayed true to my heart and true to this team, because this is a team that I like. And you know, it's been a really hard last 4 or 5 years for us. Ever since Derrick Rose came on the scene, you know, there's been a lot of hope. There's been you know, a lot of things that we wanted the team to get for us. And unfortunately, that hasn't really been the case. It's been really tough to watch them lose in the playoffs. You know, obviously the first year of Tom Thibodeau, where that year in 2010-11, where we went all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals, and we thought this is the start of something good, even though we lost against the Heat 4-1. You know, Derrick Rose coming back and obviously getting injured that first game against the 76ers, and then everything really unraveled after that. So it's been painful to be a Bulls fan over the past 5 years. But I'll touch in a little bit. You know, they're 7-3 right now as of this taping. They're 15 in points per game, 4th in rebounds, 10th in ten in assists, and 11th in opposing points per game. So, you know, the defense is obviously a little bit suspect. The offense, we're right in the middle of the road. You know, we're not really anything special, if you will. And when you look at our stats, you know, we score about 100 points a game. We have about 47 rebounds a game. We're shooting 74% from the free throw line, which is something that I don't necessarily like. I think that they need to start practicing that a little bit more. They need to go back to the basics and put the guys, get them a shooting regime, where they shooting the ball in practice. We're getting about 23 times to the line. So, I mean, when a team gets that many free throws in a game, you should be hitting at a better clip than 74%. We're shooting just a tad over 37% from three-point range. Now, that I like that. I like that, that percentage. However, I think that it could probably be closer to 40%, and that would probably make me a little bit happier. When you take a look at the home and road split, we've played 6 games at home. We played 4 on the road, and you look at the team at home versus on the road, and we definitely are playing better on the road than at home, stat-wise at least. I mean, we're averaging just a tad over 97%, 97 points per game, I apologize, at home. When we go on the road, we're averaging about 106 points per game. So that right there, it's a difference of 9 points. That's a lot of points in basketball. And when you can score 9 points on the road and yet you lose them at home, there's got to be some concern right there for the coach. And in this case, Fred Hoiberg, first year man out of, coming out of college from Iowa State, I think he's got some work to do on that regard. We go over to turnovers per game. At home we're averaging about 12 turnovers per game. On the road we're averaging 17. Free throw percentage, actually we're shooting better free throws on the road. But we're also getting more to the line at home, but we're shooting about 73% at home. 3-point percentage, however, this is where I think it gets really weird. Actually, let me go back and read this field goal percentage first. At home, we're shooting 40% from the field as a unit. And then on the road, we're shooting 46%. Now, if you listen to all these stats and you think, well, these guys must be, they must be bad at home. We're 5-1 in the United States, and we're 2-2 everywhere else. So there's really a little bit of a disconnect. And then when you look at the 3-point percentage, we're shooting 43% from 3-point land on the road, and at home we're shooting at about 33% clip, which, it's honestly, it's weird to me, because when you're at home, you're more comfortable. You know your areas. You know where your spot is, especially at home. You know, guys, you know, if you're listening to this and you've never been a basketball player, whether that's in school or, you know, go out into the neighborhood and shoot hoops with your friends, you know, when you're a basketball player, you kind of like look up for your spot on the floor. And I remember my spot on the floor, just to compare it to somebody, it was kind of like that Tim Duncan mid-range jumper off the glass. And that shot, I always knew I had about a 70% chance of making it when I was, you know, when I was a young guy playing basketball in my neighborhood. I was never any good from three-point land, but I knew that shot specifically, if I got enough space between my man and myself, the man that was guarding me, I knew I could make it if I got the chance. So guys, especially, you know, in the NBA, they know their home court. They know where it is they can go. And, you know, they can make shots from there. So this is where I think the biggest disparity is right now. I mean, how can a team shoot 33% at home from three-point land and shoot 43% on the road? Call it motivation. They've got extra motivation on the road, maybe. But I think this should be reversed, or maybe even, you know, take it, you know, going halfway, you know, meeting it halfway. I just think that, you know, that this should be a better, you know, shooting team. Then again, you go to the stats on days of rest. So the Bulls have only actually had one back-to-back game, and they're 1-0 in it. They're 1-0 in it, and they scored 115 points in that game. Versus 100 that the other team scored. So they were pretty good. Now you go to the games where they've had at least one day of rest. They're 3-3. And with one day of rest, they're shooting a 36% clip from three-point range, 75% from the free throw line, and they scored 99 points per game. And they have a plus-minus of 0.7, negative 0.7. With 2 days of rest, they're 1-0, and then with 3 days of rest, they're 2-0. So they're 7-3 currently, so their three losses have all come with one day of rest. So that's just a couple of stats there for you. If we go to the advanced metrics real quick, you know, for the year, the Bulls have a defensive rating of 96.3, which is basically, again, the number of points allowed per 100 possessions by a team. So they're allowing 96% points per 100 possessions. Offensive rating, which is the number of points scored per 100 possessions by a team, it's 98.4. So, you know, you got about a 2.1 plus minus there in the positive, which is a good thing. It's a good thing. So then, you know, you go to the days of rest. You know, the offensive rating on 0 days of rest, like I said, it was only one game right there. It's 113 versus 97.7 on the defensive rating. Now, if you go to the 1 day rest where they're 3-3 right now, this is where it gets tricky. 1 day rest, 96 points of offensive rating and 96.2 of defensive rating. 2 days of rest, 98 points offense, 95 defense, 3 days of rest, 98 points offense, and 96 points of defense. So pretty interesting stats for this team. I think that right now as a fan, this is a team that's on the middle of the road. Even though they're 7-3 and they're playing good basketball, I just don't think, and you know, maybe I'm wrong, I don't think right now this team has got its full potential on. And, you know, maybe it's the style of play that they're playing, maybe it's the style of, you know, the coaching and all that, but I don't think that their style of play right now is showing. I mean, they've won three games in a row. You know, you take Philadelphia, they beat them 111-88, they beat Charlotte 102-97, and they just beat back on the 16th. They beat the Indiana Pacers in Chicago 96-95. So, you know, of their wins, of their 7 wins, obviously the most impressive win on the year so far is definitely the one against Cleveland in the first game of the year. They beat them 97-95, and then they went to Brooklyn, won that. Lost to Detroit by 4 in Detroit. Won against the Magic in Chicago. Lost in a very lopsided way at Charlotte, 105-130. And then came back, won against the Oklahoma City Thunder, who had Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. They won 104-98. In that game, I specifically remember that Derrick Rose came on in the last quarter, scoring 10 points in a row, if I'm not mistaken, for Chicago. So I that game was a really good game for Chicago. But then they go out and they go and they welcome the Minnesota Timberwolves, and they beat the Bulls 102-93 in Chicago in overtime, which was, you know, the Bulls didn't score a point in overtime, which I just could not believe. And then after that game, this is where they've gone on and won 3 straight games, and now they're playing tonight, actually, November 18th at Phoenix. Phoenix is 6-4. They're 5-2 at home. So, you know, it's going to be a tough game. Phoenix is a good team. You know, you can't discount them. And then after Phoenix, they go to Golden State. They're sort of in the Western Conference little tour right now. The Bulls are 3 games in the Western Conference. They're going to go to Golden State on November 20th, and this is the game. So this is going to be basically a one-day rest for them traveling from Phoenix to Oakland. And this is going to be a good game for them. And like I said, this is the game where I believe Golden State could have an issue staying undefeated just because of the way Chicago played them last year. And then after that, Chicago goes to Portland on November 24th. And then the day after Thanksgiving, just to give you that, they go to Indiana. So it's going to be Chicago at Indiana on November 27th. And I'm hoping to be at that game to see the Bulls play against Indiana. And then November 30th, they finally go back home against the Spurs, who are obviously the first team in the Southwest right now. They're 8-2. So I think the NBA right now, the state of the NBA, like I said, it's an interesting season. It's still a very young season, obviously. There's still a lot to go on. It's you know, teams are still kind of like unraveling, and they're, you know, trying to, you know, see where they are. You know, coaches are still trying different lineups. They're still trying different guys on the court, and that's, I think, this is the time right now in the NBA where I think this is very important for them to do. Because if they don't do this, then it's going to be an issue down the road. So if you're a new coach, and I'll take the Rockets case right now where they let go of McHale. If you're that new coach, you know, coming in, who's an assistant, Mr. Bickerstaff, you're coming in this situation, you know, what are you looking at? I mean, you're looking at James Harden, one of the best players in the league right now. Dwight Howard, who used to be a menace at the center spot. You know, you got a great team. However, I don't think that this team together as a cohesive unit, I don't think they get along. I think they got a lot of good guys in the offseason to come in. And yes, they did that. They got, you know, they got the point guard out of Denver, Ty Lawson. You know, he's a good guy, he's a good player. I don't think he fits. You know, a lot of people, James Harden, I was going to say something about the way people think that, you know, he might be a good fit. I don't think he fits. And the reason why I don't think he fits is because James Harden needs the ball a lot in his hand. You know, he's a two guard, he's a shooting guard. However, I just don't think he fits. And, you know, you had a guy in Jeremy Lin a couple years ago, you had a guy and you know, point guard that, you know, could come in and he could make sure that James Harden had the ball all the time. James Harden, he needs the ball. He's, you know, 6 foot five, I said 6 foot four, 6 foot five, two guard. I mean, yeah, he's had some good numbers so far in 11 games. I mean, he's averaging 27 points, six rebounds, and five assists. But he needs the ball more. And then you look at a guy like Dwight Howard right now. He's only played seven of the 11 games. He has some good average, 15 points, 12 and a half rebounds. But I don't know. And then Ty Lawson, you know, a lot of people saying, you know, he's exactly what this team needs, and he's going to fit in great. But look at his numbers, 8 points a game, 3 rebounds, and then the category that you want him to excel, which is assists, he's only averaging 5 assists per game. And then, you know, you're basically coming in with him, and you're making sure that a guy like Patrick Beverley, who could probably be in there right now and be effective running this team because he's been in Houston for a long time, you know, you're shutting him down. You're making sure he doesn't play that often. And, you know, yes, they still get him in. They still, you know, get him to play. However, he needs more time. I think he needs more time so that he can develop a lot better. And, you know, he's not doing that. So I don't know. You know, we're looking at this maybe the wrong way. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the Rockets will turn it around. But as of right now, you know, as of this taping, you know, the Rockets they're not winning. They're actually trailing the Portland Trail Blazers in Houston, 96-89, with just a minute remaining in the fourth quarter. So what? I don't know. I guess I'm just trying to make excuses for something that can't be excusable. So, you know, the disparity is right there. You know, maybe the change in coach, maybe it's not working today. Maybe it's going to work, you know, who knows, 2 weeks from now, a month from now, you know, after the All-Star break, who knows? I mean, that's up to the team, you know, the guys that are there, they know what's going on. So, you know, I guess I'm just a little worried. I mean, I said at the beginning, you know, I'm not a fan of the Rockets by any means. But, you know, I hate to see guys struggling, especially guys that are as good as James Harden and obviously Dwight Howard. I'm not a Dwight Howard fan by any means. I don't like the guy. I think he's done bad things for coaches. And I think that the whole Kevin McHale thing right now probably, you know, was something that he had his hand in. I don't want to go into details. I don't know all the details. I'm not an insider or anything. I'm not going to call myself an NBA insider. I read the news just like you, the listeners do. So, but it's just, to me, it's odd the way this has gone out. But speaking of odd, I just want to touch briefly on the Oklahoma City Thunder. You know, the Thunder, they're a really interesting team. Because even though, you know, people they think they know, you know, right now Kevin Durant is out, so it's kind of like, okay, you know, where is Kevin? He's injured again. You know, what do you make of this team? What do you make of this team and the way that they're playing? And I don't know. I mean, it just seems to me that they should have probably taken a little bit more time in bringing Kevin Durant in. You know, he had several surgeries last year. You know, he had several issues with his legs. Just let him rest up. There's really not a huge, you know, need for him when you got Russell Westbrook running the show. And right now, you know, as of this taping, they're taking it, you know, to the team, to the New Orleans Pelicans. They're winning 107-100 with 28 seconds remaining in the fourth. But, you know, you don't really need Kevin Durant to get injured, you know, beyond what he's been injured. I mean, you know, through 8 games, you know, he was averaging 28 points a game, 7 rebounds, 3 assists. But, you know, you want to look at Westbrook and you want to give him that chance. And I mean, he's been phenomenal. He has been the best point guard in the NBA by far. And for those, you know, for those people who always doubted his style of play and whether he could be an actual point guard, pass the ball, look at these numbers. 26 points a game, 7 rebounds, almost 8, and 10.5 assists per game. You call this a man who can't pass the ball? You call this a man who can't set up your offense? I mean, yes, he's had to take on additional, you know, scoring load and burden, if you will, but he's done it and a whole lot more. So if you look at him right now, my God, he's doing such a great job with this team, running this team. Now that Kevin Durant is out of here, you know, it's out of the equation right now, that I don't know what else do you want from the guy. So he's doing a phenomenal job at what he's doing. So, I mean, I just think that, you know, he's amazing. I mean, I think he's great at what he does, and I think that, you know, they should give him more chance. They should be very cautious with Kevin Durant, you know, where he's going, what he's doing, you know, what's happening right now. I think that they should be very careful with him. And, you know, they said, you know, we're gonna give him a 7 to 10 day timeline. And I was just actually listening to the news today where they were saying, well, you know, we're gonna make sure that the next time we evaluate Kevin is going to be in that latter part of those 10 days. So you're looking at basically the 10th day. So today, as it stands, it would have been day 7. But look at the stats for this team. I mean, they're 6-5. You know, the division where they're at, the Northwest Division, is going to be a terrible division this year. They're number 1. So they're 6-5. They're number 2 in the NBA in points per game. They're number 1 in rebounds. They're 8th in assists. But then here's the tricky part. They're 26th in opponent points per game. That's a lot of points to give out. And, you know, I don't care how much points you score. I don't care how much, you know, points you bring to the table. I think that is a lot of points to give out. I mean, you're 26th in the NBA in opposing points per game. That's too much. If you're really seriously considering to become a championship contender in this league, you definitely should take a look at, you know, what it is or how much, you know, defense your team is playing. And I don't think that is, you know, the case here, because they're not doing it the way it's supposed to be. I mean, yes, you can score a lot of points. You've definitely shown that. You're number 2 in the NBA right now. However, I think you still need, good defense. And if you don't have good defense, and in this case, I mean, I think that their biggest point or their biggest issue is, you know, the perimeter, because they have guys in the middle who can block shots. You know, they have guys in the middle who can come in and block shots. But, you know, if you don't do that, if you don't play defense in the perimeter, then, you know, you got a big issue. I mean, you look at the stats, you know, they're first in rebounds. They're averaging almost 49 rebounds a game. They're averaging almost 8 blocks a game. And on top of that, almost 8 steals a game. However, look at this. They're turning the ball over at a clip 17 times per game. That's their average. You want to become a team that's, you know, that wants to be right there in the air for the NBA championship, that wants to, you know, overthrow the Golden State Warriors, you know, make sure that the push that the San Antonio Spurs are going to make this year does not go, you know, well, you got to do better than that. You got to do better than 26th in opponents' points per game. I'm sorry, you know, if you don't do that, I don't care how many steals or blocks you get. If you don't make sure that you get the scores down on the other side of the ball, I don't care how many points you score. That, you know, you can score 200, but if the other team can score 201, that just means you lost by 1. So, you know, Oklahoma City, I hope that they can get it together and, you know, start playing better defense. You know, I like this team, and, you know, I won't even go into the whole Durant and Westbrook and what's going to happen next year or, you know, next offseason. I really like this team the way it is. I think these guys should continue playing together for the longest time. However, you know, things happen, you know, money talks, and that's basically what can happen, you know. People could, you know, leave as early as next, you know, next summer. So, you know, I would say this to the Oklahoma City fans, you know, enjoy it while you can, you know, because you don't know what's going to happen after that, after this year. So, I'm sorry. I think we went a little, you know, veer a little bit out of, you know, what was going to be talked about here. It's been a great experience here, this first Anything and Everything podcast. And, you know, even though we went on about sports mostly, and I haven't even touched the NFL yet, I just wanted to give you a brief, you know, look into what it is that I wanted to do. And I'm really hoping that you like my podcast. Please leave comments in the comments section. Please review it. You know, I can take the criticism, whether good or bad. I mean, it's, I like it. I mean, I think this is a good opportunity for me to put my, you know, opinions out there, my expressions, and I'm not looking into, you know, getting somebody to think the same way I do. I'm just looking for discussion on some things. So hopefully, you know, in my next podcast, which will be up pretty soon as well, I'll start working on that pretty soon. We'll get more topics, more different topics in sports. I think that the way that I'm going to do this is I'm going to do a sports podcast, and it's going to be just a general podcast. I'm going to be talking about what's going on in sports, you know, whether that's the NFL, MLB, NBA. I don't really look at the NHL, NASCAR, you know, things, those other sports, but if there's something big that I need to cover, you know, or that I want to talk about, I'll talk about it. And, you know, I want to do it that way. I may split that off that way just because I think it'll be probably better for the podcast as a whole, you know, just to make sure that it's, you know, it's just the way it is. I really want to say thank you, you know, to all of you that are listening to this. I don't know, you know, I'm trying to you know, be as politically correct as I can be. I really appreciate your time. I really appreciate your help. I really appreciate your, you know, the way that you guys are looking at this and listening right now. I really do. You know, I think this is a great thing for me. This is my first podcast ever, so I was kind of hoping, you know, that people that were going to be here and be looking at this, you know, liked it. So I'm very happy, you know, to do this. I just wanted to tell you that thank you very much for your support. Thank you very much for listening, and hopefully, you know, you'll continue to listen. The podcast, and you know, we'll go from there. I think this is a great opportunity, not only for me, but you know, but for all of you, just for me in general, to get to know you, and that way you can get to know me. And you know, I just think that's going to be a great thing. So without further ado, I really thank you very much for your time, for your listening time, and I hope to see you. Hope to see you another time. Take care.